listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host for the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very talented singer-songwriter, Mr. Jimmy Pearson. How are you, Jimmy?
So good, Nikki. How are you, man? So good to see you.
I'm good, too. You know what? I don't know if you caught the vice presidential debate. Did you watch it at all?
I did not, no.
Okay. Yeah, you're like, I don't care about these puppets.
I do, but I was at a music festival all weekend, and after a weekend of just like love and acceptance, it's really hard to watch dark stuff, you know?
Yes. Oh, I love that you said that. You know, I have my moments where I pay attention. I have my moments where I'm like, shut it out. It's a lot of bullshit, so I totally get that, man.
Yeah,
exactly. How are you, dude? How are you? How's life? How are things?
I'm great, man. Busy. Working super duper hard, building a lot of projects, releasing things, playing a ton, just, you know, booking stages, doing all this stuff. It's been nonstop.
Doing the hustle. Well, that's, you know, that's, we you know, we hate doing it and we love doing it at the same time. It's like, I don't know if you feel like this, but when I'm not doing it, I'm like, what are you doing? And when I am doing it, I'm like, man, I need a nap. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I love doing it, but I love to complain about it.
Yes, sure. Yes. I think that's every artist. It's like, we love it, but we love to be like, man, I just want to be home watching a movie or something. And then when you're at home watching a movie, you're like, man, I should be gigging. I should be playing. I should be out there sharing my story. Yeah, I constantly have that debate. So we're going to share some of your music, but let's go back to the Oberlin, Ohio days. What was the moment of zen for you that made you want to become a musician?
Dang, that's a great question. Well, my dad and my mom were both musicians. My mom played French horn, super, super good. I mean, I literally, in the womb, spent 9 months just listening to a horn next to my head, you know? Wow. So, that's like, crazy. It was in my blood. My dad was a trumpet player. Incredibly talented, you know, recorded with Blood, Sweat, and Tears, recorded with Chicago. Dude, this dude was the first cornet in the Marine Corps band at JFK's funeral.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what? And he had a couple albums. Anyway, so I grew up with that, and I was always asked to play instruments. So I was playing clarinet and saxophone. I was playing piano. I was in choirs. I was in youth orchestras. I started playing guitar and drums. And then I started writing music around 13. And I think I went to college to become an actor. That was like the dream for me. I was like, I wanted to be in movies. I am in movies now. I am doing that. But it's like, that was the thing that I really wanted more than anything. And I went to college and I was 17 and it was far too early. And
where did you go to school?
DePauw University with a W. It was far too early. And I flunked out. It didn't work. And while I was there, I had been playing some music and getting noticed by some guys. I don't even remember Scratch Magazine.
Yeah, old school. Yeah,
that's like old school.
Late 90s, maybe mid
90s. I think mid to late 90s into like the early 2000s, mid 2000s. So this was 2007. So this guy Kevin Ernest, incredibly talented musician, he scouted me on MySpace and was like, "Dude, I love your music. I want to put you on our compilation album." And I was going, you know, I can't afford to, you know, to do that. And he says, well, keep in touch with me. And this guy puts me on, he started his own magazine called La Bella Muerte. And he puts me on three of their CDs that were just worldwide. And all of a sudden I'm realizing, wow, people actually like what I'm doing. And I go, maybe this should just be my focus. And I think that was kind of the moment that I was like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to make music for whoever wants to listen.
Well, you know, it's cool because it's like you have that moment of like, wow, what I'm throwing out there is coming back to me. And I think that's like, you know, there are a lot of artists. Nick Drake is one of my favorite artists. And, you know, he didn't get that. He didn't have that. And he was such a powerful songwriter and musician. And he committed suicide before he even, like, the world really knew who he was. And then now the world embraces music. So it's like, whenever I think about any artist getting that positive feedback, it's like such a great thing, because there are so many artists that they live their lives not knowing if they get that feedback. So it's like we live in a time where, you know, it's good and a positive thing when you can get that immediate reaction and that support. And did you kind of like drop the acting thing for a little bit, or did you just like, okay, I'm going to try and pursue both and see where it leads me?
I did drop it. And I think largely because as a 17, 18 year old, I didn't really know. I didn't have any money. I didn't know where to turn for support. I didn't know how to do anything. I was living in Ohio, and all I knew was this guy, Kevin Ernest, said, "Hey man, if you ever make it to California, I'll help you however I can in music." And that was enough for me to be like, I'm going to California, but I don't know what I'm going to find there. Yeah.
Wow.
And it took me 6 years to get there.
Right.
You know, but
you packed your car, you packed it. You just, did you sell stuff, furniture, and then pack up your car with what you had and then just drive it out?
Yeah, basically at 20 years old, I had $300 to my name. I actually left Ohio and went to Oklahoma. It was like the closest I could get. I just had somebody that was like, "Hey, you can come here and I'll stay with me." And I said, "Sure." So I went there, you know, and stayed there for 3.5 years until I finally made it to California.
Wow. Dude, you like did the move in such a way that was like, you know, I commend artists that do that, first of all, because I'm from LA, you know what I mean? So you don't realize how much of a grind it is to pack up your things, leave everything you know, leave your friends, leave your family, leave all the traditions, the geography, to go to like an uncharted place that you only know from an image. You know what I mean? Sure, it's like, well, sure. What was your idea of what LA, Hollywood, the music industry was coming from Ohio?
Man, I don't know. I don't know that I had an idea of it. I mean, I felt that it was this big organism, right? Like this huge thing that like was practically impossible to tap into. But I felt like, hey, somebody likes me, so I must have some kind of a shot.
Right.
Whatever that is. But
and you were playing with a band or anything like that. You were just playing solo.
I was playing solo at the time. And dude, shit, when I went to Oklahoma, before then I was doing a lot of like acoustic folk punk. I was playing in an indie punk band. I went to Oklahoma and I started screaming in a Southern rock hardcore band.
That's awesome. Wow, you're a man of towns.
And we that was fun. We opened for we were playing with a ton of crazy bands in the scene, and then I started playing and singing in a band called Mystery Alaska, which was like post hardcore, kind of like Vanna, if you know that band at all.
Yeah.
And so like I kind of went through the ringer. So my whole thing was, I don't really know what to expect anywhere. All I knew is I wanted to make music and I hoped somebody heard it that had some kind of pull somewhere.
Right.
And things went places. I mean, we had people at Victory Records looking at us, right? We had conversations with people who were doing music videos for us and this and that. Like things were popping off, but you never know. You never know where anything is going to lead. So I think my whole thing was, I don't know what any of this looks like, but I'm going to act like I know what the hell I'm doing here and hope that something sticks somewhere.
Right. Right. Well, it's what's so funny. It's like for me, I was a kid singer working in the industry thinking like, oh, this is normal. It wasn't normal at all. So it's like when I hear somebody come from outside of LA and this place is a jungle, like it's a circus. Everything about it is like, it's like a madhouse. It's like, oh, come over here. Look over here. Oh, there's some mirrors over here. You may get hustled in this corner. You may make it through this like rite of passage. And it's just like this. It's in layers, you know. This is what I tell people. Like, I'm like, you want to know the trick to LA? It's everything's in layers. Like, you won't find those great people in LA right away, because we hang back until, mm-hmm. you know, those people introduce somebody, like there's like people vouch for you or people vouch for that person to bring into the circles or whatever it is.
Exactly. And
it's so weird that it's like that because there's so many people here and it's like, you know, you can get hustled so easily. It's like, I'm just from Arcadia, but I remember coming to LA and just like realizing, oh my God, there's hustlers in every part of the city that just will try to sell you that they're an agent, they're a label, they're whatever it is, a promoter. And it's like, you realize, okay, some things are real and some things are total bullshit. Tell me what those experiences were like for you, because, you know, coming from being from LA, I was kind of prepared, but I can't imagine what somebody from the Midwest, you know, like, you know, bushy tailed and just like ready, like, hey, I'm ready for opportunities. What was that kind of situation that you first embraced or kind of went through?
That's the thing, is because of Kevin. Kevin gave me these ins. He gave me these openings. I was playing gigs at the CBS studio lot within the first year that I was here, like for private parties for this place called Greenhouse Media that was doing whatever they were doing. And like that, so I was getting those things off the bat. And I kind of got the idea that, oh, this, everybody's like this. We all help each other. Cool. And you know, you find out pretty quick that that's definitely not the case in this city, and or in this industry, you know. But I think one of the things too is like one of the first moments that really happened for me was I got a gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and then of course it was pay to play, and I hadn't realized like some details were left out. And then I was like, well, this is what I've sold. And they were like, well, you're going to have to cover the remaining 407. And I was like, excuse me. No, I'm not going to play like that. And they're like, well, this is the opportunity. And if you screw us, you're not going to play with us again. And I was like, well, guess I'm not going to play here. Like, that's not how I'm going to operate. What? You know? And I think I found out pretty quick that there are certain, like I learned boundaries real fast. Things that I was going to try and do and things I wasn't going to try and do. And unfortunately, that led me really quickly into just Songwriterville. And I was just kind of doing open mics and songwriter rounds for a while and not really progressing anywhere outside of that until I started realizing how, you know, meeting more musicians, realizing how to build a band out here, realizing how to do, you know, what I really wanted, I guess.
Right. You know, it's funny because... So my band recently headlined the Whiskey.
Okay.
I waited a long time because that was what everybody told me. Oh, you got to pay to play, pay to play. And I was like, there's no way I'm ever doing that. There's just no way. So I remember calling the Whiskey and like, you know, the first booker's like, hey man, this is the deal. We print out like 40 tickets. We charge you for 200 and you make whatever on top of that. And I literally was like, hey bro, we've been touring for 20 years. We have brought 1,000 people to the House of Blues. We don't do that. And he was like, oh, and I was like, there's got to be a national booker there. Can I talk to him? And he was like, oh yeah. He's like, I can't book those shows. And I was like, oh, immediately, like you realize 95% of most bands aren't going to know that there's another door. And it took me 20 years of like booking shows and like being able to talk the talk to know, like, yo, I can say no to this door and you'll eventually get me to another door. So we went to another door and it was none of that. It was like, hey, we've never worked together. Let's split everything right from the first dollar. And I said, great, easy breezy. And it ended up like being awesome because everybody won, everybody made money. And, you know, it's just like one of those things. But dude, that venue is such a hustle because of that pay to play thing, because they have this history that they kind of like dangle in front of you, like, oh, the Doors played here. Oh, Jimi Hendrix played here. Like, but it's like, it's not the same venue that those guys played. A, B, it's not fair to dangle that carrot to musicians who aspire to be like those players and then make them pay to play. That venue wasn't making Jimi Hendrix pay to play for tickets.
No,
it's like,
it doesn't make any sense, but they do. They make it look so shiny.
Yes.
And you're like, yeah. And then you realize far too late that you just signed yourself away and you're like, hold up.
Did you at least see your name on the bill? Because that I feel like was that's like a worthy like rite of passage just to see that, you know?
I didn't play it. I didn't go through with anything.
Oh, you didn't play it. Well, you know what? Next time we play it, I'm going to have you play with us. So that
Let's
way.
Go.
You know, but honestly, that for me, driving up and down Sunset and seeing my name on the bill for that when we did it, I was like, oh, this is what the last 20 years have been. Like this is why you do it. So I love that you were like, no, I'm not going to do pay to play. Because a lot of bands go through this in Hollywood, coming from out of town, and they do the deals. They do all the promotion. They sell all the tickets. And then they're left with $100, maybe. Yeah. And the venue made $400 or $500. And it's like, what? So, you know, it's sad that it works like that. It's unfortunate because it doesn't work like that outside of L.A. and any other city. And I know you know this.
Yeah.
So then you found these songwriter rounds. When was the time where you're like, okay, I'm ready to be an artist again. Let's get past all that bullshit. Let's make records. Let's play shows. Let's get back to what it's really about. How did that kind of come around again for you?
Trying to think of when, because there've been some ins and outs, right? I want to say that 2015 and 16, like 2016, I was doing, you know, Republic of Pi and that a lot. I was at a residency there that I was every other Thursday. And I did a lot of that stuff for a while, which was a lot of fun because I was writing so much. And about 2017, 18, I got in touch with Michael Blue out at Revolver.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, super, super sweet guy. Went out there and got the opportunity to play some music. And he was, you know, expressed to me that he was blown away, and not exactly those words, but, you know, and we never really formed anything out of that, unfortunately. But all of that, I think, kept being momentum to push me forward. And I found myself in more and more studios doing work with guys like Drew DeCaro. Do you know this guy, Drew DeCaro? He was playing with Miguel for a while. He was with 99 Punks with Vic Mensa.
Okay.
So I found myself in a few of those places, Vic Mensa studios and things. And that was really invigorating for me because not only was I finding myself in these interesting places in the industry that kind of made me feel like, oh, I'm actually doing something here. But also I was learning so much about production, man, just being a fly on the wall. And Drew would have me, you know, sitting at the computer working on the vocal comps, you know, or, you know, working on this or that. And I got so much rich experience from that. And I was really poised to like do something right in that moment, like to really push. I had people talking to me saying like, hey, you know, again, who knows what the talk was, but hey, we're ready. If you're ready, let's go type of things.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, I'm ready. And then I kind of went through this thing in my life where I was like having a weird quarter life crisis, you know, and I put all my shit in storage and I moved into my car and I started couch surfing and ended up on Kauai for 9 months and was completely out of the game for a minute, just playing music on Kauai. Yeah.
Wow. That's so awesome. Not a bad place. Kind of like, you know, end up, you know what I mean? That's smart.
No, not at all, dude. And I was playing a lot of music out there and having a lot of fun. And doing some hippie healing stuff, and it was a good time. But I didn't really hit the music circuit again hard. I didn't decide, okay, I'm ready to be an artist again fully, I think, until 2022.
Wow.
That was the moment.
What was the reason or what was the catalyst?
I, in 2020, got married. And it was, unfortunately, a really tough experience for the both of us. We went through a tough marriage and had a tough separation. And it was really, really unfortunate. And during that time, I just wasn't playing music at all. I just was completely off of the game. And when we separated and I started kind of coming back into myself, I started realizing, oh my God, what the fuck am I doing? I need to be playing music. Why am I not making music, and I started producing again, and I started reaching out to people, and ended up with all these players, and it just started blossoming, and everything started coming together again. And I feel like I got busier and busier, and everything started to fall into place more and more. And yeah. So when you and I met, like, I was still like still blossoming back into the game for myself too.
And you and I played, you know, the Memorial for Sasha for our friend Adam, and that was a crazy, that was a pretty emotional experience. I know you felt the same thing, and I felt the same thing. And we were kind of like bonded by music through Adam, who's a great, great friend of ours. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, he told me, he was like, man, you're going to love Jimmy. And like, as soon as we met, we kind of just hit it off because we were both guitar players.
Yeah.
Knew how to just like jam and like hang and do the thing. And it just was like, oh, this makes total sense. This is easy. This is like musical brotherhood. You know what I mean?
It's so fun, man.
Yeah, it was super fun, especially with something that was super hard and dark. And
yeah, well, because it felt like because of that bond, we were able to, we both had the same intention of creating something of the same experience at this wake. You know, we wanted to bring some kind of joy into the sorrow, marry the emotions a bit so that people can enjoy remembering this person, you know? And I think that, you know, that's one of those things is like, we had that same intention. We were just in that same place, and it just worked so well, dude.
Right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Totally agree. I want to feature some of your music. Why don't we play? We both have a song named Sunrise, so I was like, we need to start with this song. So this is Jim Pearson with a song called Sunrise.
Way you walk into the room, I was waiting on you. But that look in your eyes says you already knew. Yeah. It might be your ego that's making me feel so enamored by you. But it's cool, to be honest, I move.
Keep it above. It's thrilling me how you be killing the game without breaking a sweat. And you know you got it, cause I see you taking the house without placing a bet. Don't get me wrong, I'm no stranger to cloud, I ain't chasing a bit. But everything better with sauce. So I'm embracing the drip, and I'm catching feelings like a cold or a cab or a wave. And you and your vibe trying to jump me, so y'all can just run me my fade. And we can just chill, I'm not the shackles you probably used to. I'm just saying that we could be great, tight like the crowd, I'm watching you move through.
Yeah, man, that was awesome, dude. Nice dance moves too, bro.
Thank you, brother.
Shot it in the desert, I assume. Where did you shoot it?
Out in Pomona.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Dude, great song. great melody. I like the rap flow. I like the beat. Tell me how this song came about. What was the influence?
I was living on Kauai, and I was coming back to LA to do some work in the studio with my buddy Drew DeCaro, and I was going to be here for like 3 weeks. And this guy, Michael, is somebody that I met, or actually he met me through a mutual friend in Oklahoma, but he kind of didn't reach out to me until I was living out here, and we formed kind of a friendship over Instagram. And he hit me up and was like, "Hey man, I saw you're going to be in town in LA." He was living in Colorado at the time, Denver. And he says, "I'd love to fly out and write something with you and record it." And so he paid for the session. He flew out. We wrote 2 songs. I think we recorded them both and just released that one. And it was, I honestly don't remember even how the influence came, but my buddy Drew was staying at this ridiculously large house up in the hills in Burbank. And I just remember Michael came over and we sat out by the pool overlooking the city and just wrote this song. And we were kind of talking about like, well, what do we want to talk about? You know? And he says, well, you know, every morning, you know, I wake up and I see my wife and I see the sunrise. And, you know, he goes on to say something else. And I think that's kind of where the idea was born. And we just ran with that. And there it was. And he came out it was 2021 or 22. He came out again and we shot the video.
Awesome. Good old fashioned love song, man. Good old fashioned love songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, you know what I mean? It's like, I was like, when you were, when you had the hook with the sunrise line, I was like, oh, I want to see what he's going to say to counter that or add. And with the blue skies, I was like, that was right on. It was so cool to kind of like have that meet, you know, like that.
Sure.
Which is awesome. And then did you kind of come up with like a hip hop beat for it? Was the beat made after the song was written? How did that come about?
So that was this producer who goes by Snake Child. And Snake was another buddy of Drew's. And we went over to his studio and I think in one day we just kind of knocked it out, and he kind of wrote the beat. We decided on our tempo, did the thing. I wasn't producing at the time, so I was definitely at the mercy of anybody else that could make it happen. But he had this cool shed studio, so we just went over there and knocked it out.
I love beat makers because it's like, there's something like so cool and organic about a beat maker versus just playing with a drummer sometimes, because it modernizes it a little bit. And also just like, you hear the depth of sounds or like the ideas. Like beat makers are just awesome. I love the way they put things together. It's usually pretty easy for them, but it's also like, it's the sound and textures, and that groove was just fun. It was like a little bit hip hop, a little bit reggae, and just like the hook was super, super, super hooky. I mean, it was just like, it's still echoing in my head, man. That's how you know you got it. So was that a recent release? Did you release the video a year ago? You said
the video, I think, was 22.
Okay.
And the song was, I think, 20.
And what's your writing style? Do you like to collaborate? Do you like to write solo? Do you like to do all of it? Tell me how that
works. All of it. I love to write in general, but to be fair, it's been some time since I've put a lot of work into, or much work at all, and really into writing solo stuff. I've been so stoked on working with other people lately. Just really interested, because I always find different catalysts with different people, and I think I'm selective enough that I tend to like recognize an energy and think, okay, we'll do well together. You know, when you can see somebody that's like, okay, it's not gonna be who's the best in the room; it's gonna be how can we collectively come up with the best product, and how do we all win, right? And just let's have fun and let's create some good shit. Love that vibe. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's become more of a craving for me. I'm like, I meet somebody who I think is a good writer. I'm like, can we do something? Like, we get in the studio and make something happen. That's all I want to do right now.
Yeah. You know, what's cool is I always have the concept, be at the mercy of the best idea in the room. Always. So it's like, here's something that's like, if it works, run with it. You know what I mean? Sure. Don't be like, wait a minute, maybe we can try just to get your idea in there. It's like, so I just love when there's a great idea in the room. It's like, boom, that's it. Let's run with that and just like see what can kind of be cultivated. You know, that's the beauty of collaboration. It's kind of like, you know, you have to put all your egos aside, just make something great together. That's what makes great art. You know,
it's like, right.
That's the beauty of collaboration. I also love just writing stuff on my own because there's nobody to compete with except yourself. So there's part of that too. So sure. do you ever just like sit and write riffs? Do you write lyrics? Do you kind of like just kind of mess around with things or ideas or tape those ideas? Like, what's your process?
Well, I used to do a lot of lyric writing without anything. I would just write stuff down, write ideas. And then I went to a lot of just, I would start with the guitar and I would find a riff and I would just play with riffs for a while until I found something. And then I would write the whole thing in one fell swoop, lyrics and all, just right on the acoustic guitar. That was how I wrote for the longest time.
That's
until
crazy.
I learned how to produce.
Right. Right.
And now that I
figured out, I still can't figure out where all that stuff comes from. You know what I mean? When you just get hit with inspiration, it's like,
sure.
It's like, where does that come from? I don't know.
It's wild.
It is,
and I think part of it for me is, and to touch on, I guess my spiritual understanding of it is that kind of, I feel like when I'm writing, you ever see that movie Soul?
No, oh yeah, of course, yeah,
the
yeah.
Disney, yeah. When they like float up and they're playing in the other dimension, that's like almost the most accurate depiction I can think of what's actually happening. It's like this open channel where just all of the information's coming and you're just kind of letting it out because what else can you do with it?
Yes.
You know?
I love that. Like, there's an accessibility that artists have that we don't understand, that we're all bonded by and we all know what it is. We don't always talk about what that is because it's, I think, one of the most fascinating parts about art. It's like a lot of people ask me, was the show the best? You know, were you so excited about the show and the people? And I'm like, my favorite moments are like when nobody's around, nobody's awake, and I just have a moment like that. It's like, yo, that is just for me and music and my love for music. And it's like, that's still what rejuvenates me to keep writing and keep doing it. But it's like the payoff is, it is the show. It is playing it live and having that moment.
Right.
Doing that thing. But it's nice to hear you say something like that about what the infinite is and like having that access to it, because man, it never ceases to amaze me. I still don't know what it is and I'm still trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
It's cool. Let's play something else. What do you want to play us next?
I don't remember what I sent you.
Oh no. Yeah, what are the songs we got? Maybe Sam.
I apologize. I'm coming back from a festival for the last 4 days, so my mind's...
We got No Reason. Let's play No Reason.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No Reason.
We build our trust. Whoa, whoa, whoa. When we got distance, doesn't
change our existence miles away. Smile and say we can still communicate.
Yep.
I like the way you shine on a bright day. My shadow took a hike and the light stayed. Now I'm gonna love you the right way. Never fall in, never halfway. There's a voice in your heartbeat. Tell the baby to move to the backseat. I can feel the force when you touch me. We don't need no reason to be
dude. Very cool. Tell me how this collaboration came about. Tell me how this song was created.
The first time I worked with this guy, he found me on Fiverr and he was looking for someone to do a song with him, and we did it and we had fun with it, and we kind of agreed, let's do a little collaboration album. And he lives in Australia and I was living in Laguna Niguel randomly. And so he
spots to just kind of dwell.
Yeah, exactly.
Why Laguna and nothing else? That's it.
Yep. And so he sent me some beats and I went into the closet and recorded all the vocals. And I just moved back from Kauai. So it was this wild little thing. And I was really excited to just put something out. And yeah, so this was one of the beats he sent me, and I was kind of in this space of like feeling like what I wanted in a relationship in life was communication.
Right.
And I think I was feeling like maybe at that moment I had good communication in my life with the people in my life, and that was really like a driving factor in this. I think it was right at the beginning of this relationship, and everything felt, it was that, you know, that little honeymoon period, everything feels so good and you're kind of just like, wow, we communicate, this is great, and, right. You know, nothing's grown tiresome just yet. You know. And so that's what that song was really based on, and it was this whole project was really the first time that I have ever recorded my own vocals and comped them all myself and did just really all of that alone, and I felt super super proud of it. And this to this day is still one that people really seem to enjoy. Anytime anybody finds me, they always say, dude, I love No Reason. And I'm like, wow, that's really interesting that you guys love that so much.
Well, you're a very good hooky writer. Like, you write sure. memorable hooks. Tell me, like, where that comes from. What are you listening to? Who are your influences as a writer or a musician?
That's a great question. I always never know how to... Never know how to answer that.
In the moment.
Sure. No, I mean, it's definitely, it depends on the song for sure, who's inspiring me. But I mean, I love so many soul artists, right? I love Smokey Robinson, Aretha Franklin. I love me some Otis Redding. I'm so big into that world. I love anything 80s. And the 80s had such crazy, dude, the 70s too, man, so many. So I'm so eclectic, and I think I find things that are hooky. It doesn't have to be pop. I don't love pop, but I love sticky shit. Yeah. I love something that I can't get out of my head.
Yeah.
Totally. I love those things. You know, we all have those things where there's like a break in, especially if you're an artist, you know, there's a break in conversation and suddenly you're just like, you know, the song pops into your head, move it. And you're like, damn, Marky Mark, get out of, you know, like.
Right. You're like, you can't dominate two industries, damn it.
Exactly. So I'm like, that's what I really like to listen to, is the stuff that just gets stuck in your head. So I think I always think about that when I'm writing. What's some melody that I don't even know if I'm looking for a catchy melody. I just don't like it if it isn't.
Right.
Well, that's kind of, yeah.
You're like, I don't like it if it's not melodic and
hooky. Yeah. It's got to be something that I enjoy singing, and it's got to be something that, like, I could see myself just, like, jamming to over and over again.
Right.
I go through modes of, and I think this is part of it, too, because I go through periods of time where I'm listening to all the new music, and then I go through periods of time where I'm listening to all the old shit and all the things that I've, like, had playlists over the years and this and that. And then I go through periods, months sometimes, where I only listen to me.
Right.
And absolutely nothing else. And I do that so that I can try and only be inspired by myself, right, and write stuff in whatever vein. And what that ends up doing is taking me across so many genres and all over the map. But I think that's how I've at least been able to hone in on what my style and what my sound is and continue to develop and evolve and unfold that, you know?
No, it's funny you say that, because, like, I feel like with work, I go through that mode of just, like, listening to myself and kind of, like, trying to figure out, okay, how can I make this better or make it elevated, whether it's I'm writing something, it's a live recording, it's a studio recording. But I always find, I mean, you see this pile of records right here.
Yeah.
Just, like, it's always waiting for that moment that I can just be inspired. It's like, sure, oh, let me put something on that's going to change my direction and make me think about music in a different way. That there's something about that, you know, I just love listening to somebody else tell a story and do it with music, because it just, like, it ends up seeping into my music somehow. But I think as musicians, we're always working on our own music. So it's like, we're always trying to be that for somebody else. And I think those are the two modes. You're listening to yourself, you're listening to others. You're listening to yourself, how are you growing? You're listening to others to help you grow. So it's like that yang of like doing it. How do you think the music industry and music is changing as we're ending 2024? Like, when I think, you talk about the 70s, 80s, 90s, all those music forms and eras have identities. When I think of the 2000s, a lot of it's electronic, a lot of it's poppy, but a lot of it doesn't have the same kind of soul and arrangement that the 70s, 80s, and 90s did for me. And how do you think the music is changing as we head into 2025?
I love that. I see so much interesting, so many interesting things happening in music. I mean, you in one sense, I very much feel that there's so much soul coming back to music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of live instrumentation coming back. You see, even with, you know, I was just at this festival where there was a lot of, you know, EDM kind of stuff. And there are also jam bands and this and that. But even a lot of the EDM stuff, like, have live saxophone on stage. And, like, that's killer, man. I mean, it's such a game changer. Because you need that kind of thing. You need that real soul energy coming through. And so I feel in a funny way, like, we're in the existential equivalent of the 70s in terms of music. And like the 60s, you know, were its own thing, this kind of hippie thing. And in the 70s, they had all this motion left over, no idea what to do with it, right? And so it all went into music, and this wonderful soul came out of the 70s. I mean, everything from the Meters to Fleetwood to, like, you know, incredible albums, dude. Anyhow, that's what this feels like to me, because, yeah, there's so much talent right now. There's so many incredible players, and there's so many incredible interpretations of what things can sound like and why and how much soul can go into that. And people are just having fun, man. And on the other flip side, with the advancements in sound design and the synthesizers and the technology that we have, man, there's so much alien music out there now that's just so intense and its own thing and developing so rapidly too. Like, we're in this really, really interesting time for music.
It's kind of like a new renaissance, I think, you know?
There's a new renaissance happening. And there are no limitations.
Yeah.
Because everything is developing so rapidly that it's like, the second you've done this, here we are a couple years later, and there's all this new equipment, and there are all these new ideas, and it's just like, man, it's never ending.
Right.
It's right. Really cool right now. I'm really excited for the future of music in the next 5 years. I'm really excited to see where this all heads, because something big is coming, and I think some change in sound is coming. I don't know what that is.
Have you heard of Mick G? Have you heard of Mick G?
Mick G? No.
Yeah, MK.GEE. I just saw him at the Palladium. I went to USC Music School. He went there years later, dropped out, made records at his, you know, on like at home, and got signed, I think, to Interscope, and sold out. I saw him play at the Palladium. He sold out the Palladium. But dude, the guy's making real music, playing guitar, playing solos, like using samples that he's created with a live band. And I was just like, this gives me hope for the future. When I hear an artist like this, he sounds like a young Prince. He really does. Like,
that's amazing.
He's using chorus on his guitar, like just like Prince. And it's like coming out of this really smooth. I'll send you something. But what's interesting, I'm like, when I see an artist like that, I'm like, I have hope and faith in the future, because I'm like, this is a guy that makes his own music at home, writes his own melodies, plays guitar, plays solos, does all of his own production, and has found success. It's like, this is what the industry needs. We need more of this instead of like gimmicky people that are uberly successful because of a market. You know, it's like, no, I have faith in the people that are actually like diligent and disciplined in the craft to make something beautiful that it affects people. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, I have faith in the future of music, because, you know, there's not a lot that I see like that where I'm like moved. I'm like, yo, this is real. And it's like, you couldn't see him, like the way he was lit. It wasn't about his stardom, his look, his costume changes, his dance moves. It was him just playing. You would have really dug it. I was like really impressed. I was like, this is what the industry needs more of. Like people playing music, people writing their own music, producing their own music, and getting acknowledged for it. You know what I mean? Because it's so important.
I agree. I think that part of this thing that happened in music, and I think this started in the 80s kind of, when like superstars were really starting to be born, right? And you had these like, and that became the thing that people idolized. I want to be a star. I want to be, you know, the best of this, the king of that, the queen of such and such. And I think that that really threw the industry in a really weird, and music in general, in a really weird direction, because like we're talking about, like the soul and all these things left, and it became, everything became super monetary. And I think if you listen to stuff in the 70s and before even, there's, you can hear that people are creating for the love of creation. Like you can hear it's, I'm making shit because I can, and because I want to share this experience with people. And I think that you're right. I think that right now we're getting back to that almost because of, and it's part of like all these stars getting called out for all this stuff, you know, that I think people are like, I don't want, that's, I'm not trying to be a star. I want to create an experience that I can share with people. I want to have people share an experience with me. It's not like when I'm on stage, dude, it's not about being up there and performing for somebody. It's about, I love this. I want you to love this with me. Let's go. Like, let's have some fun. Right. I think that that's where, I think that's the most important thing in music. Like for me, it's like, dude, you could be one person in the crowd. You could be 10,000 people in the crowd, but I'm going to play the same because this is what I love to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I don't know if you're at the age where you're starting to get nostalgic, but I am. I'm like 45. And what's really funny, I'm like, man, I realize I've been making records for 20 years. And like when my time is over, that's what I'm leaving the world with my life experience. Yeah. It takes on like this different perspective. I never thought about it like that when I was first making records. When you're making songs, we're not thinking like that. But it's like, as you get older, you realize, whoa, this is something I'm leaving behind with my footprint. And it's super special because not a lot of people are going to be able to do that. You know what I mean? Or have some time capsule where they're like, yo, this was my life experience. This is what I was doing. This is what I was thinking about in that time period. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
That being said, let's play your next song. It says, When You Know.
When You Know, You Know.
When You Know, You Know. Here's When You Know, You Know by Jimmy Pearson.
You know your mood will fly from this moment. Watch it climb and dive before you know it. Lose your mind, it's like you don't know yourself. You're overwhelmed, starting to show it. But if you back away and tell yourself that everything is gonna be okay, over time just sitting still when you were meant to change, then you'll never know your gut was telling you the way you can make or break the day. Cause I know from my experience it ain't that serious. The fear in us directs us where to go. And in my soul, I pave the road. I'll never hesitate. Cause when you know, you know. I know. I believe when I get a feeling that there is strength in letting it go. Oh, I won't waste time. Something scary there, and sometimes I feel like I'm past repair. But the important thing is I'm aware I can bear anything. Bring it on, take a swing, stumble on. I tell myself I'm okay. So goddamn much that I changed my whole day. Holding floods with the tell on my face. My pops would be proud if he saw this. I plunked out of college and I had nowhere to go. My direction was the flow, and now I come alive with every blow. When I know, I know, I know, I believe when I get a feeling, I get a feeling that there is strength in letting it go. Letting it go. I won't waste time laying around dreaming. When you know, you know.
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 When you know, you know. I believe when I get a feeling.
Too. Did you play the solo?
No, that was Jack.
Oh man, it was cool. So tell me how the song came about. Tell me like what inspired it.
Yeah, for sure. So Jack and I met through a mutual friend, and we kind of just started doing stuff together. I had this project that I was working on and asked him to help me with it. We scored a film, and we decided let's do a song and release it. And so we started messing around. He had this really nifty guitar lick that beat it ba-da-ba. And I said, that's cool. So I laid down the bass, and then we swapped instruments on the hook and did the opposite. I put the guitar, he put the bass.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah, and then we I think we did the same with the keys. I played some of the keys, he played some of the rest, and we just kind of split everything. And that was a really, really fun way to create the song, just to kind of be like, all right, I did that part, you do this part, here, take it over, you know. And
we
were trying to come up with concept. What are we talking about? And he says, I don't know why, but I just love this phrase, when you know, you know. And I was like, well, what if you talk about, like, you know how, like, that moment where, okay, you've been holding off on something. You haven't decided to take your plunge yet. There's always that moment that clicks where you're like, oh, wait, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. What am I doing? Like, I'm not, shouldn't be over here. I'm working a 9-to-5. I should be making music or whatever, you know, whatever your epiphany is. Is that when you know moment. And yeah. And so we decided collectively, if we're going to make stuff, let's make some uplifting, you know, let's make something that gets people thinking about themselves and, you know, be vulnerable in a song, you know? And so I think both of us at the time were kind of in this idea of almost rappy verses, and they weren't really rappy, but I liked that Tom Misch sound. I love Tom Misch, Jordan Riquet, you know, Loyal Carner, all these guys are fantastic. And so that was actually how that solo came about. We were like, let's do a solo outro. I said, bro, give me a Tom Misch solo. Like, I know you can do it. let me hear something. One take, bro. He did one take, and that's what it was.
That's crazy.
I know.
It's our player right there. I love cats like that. It's like, and it's like, oh yeah, that was he cool with it? Was he like, yeah, that was it. That was the one.
Yeah. You know, I think he was like, was that good? And I was like, yeah, that was good. That was the one. What do you think? Of course that was good. Jack is so humble. He's one of the sweetest guys. Brilliant producer, fantastic songwriter, great singer. He was the one, he sang the first verse.
That's cool.
That was his voice, and he did a lot of the background vocals as well. Just an all-around talented cat and great guy. Like, super blessed to make records with him. I just realized I sent you all collaborations. That's so funny.
That's all right. That's good. you said that's the place you're in. So
that's the place I'm in, yeah.
That's when you know, man. Where can people find you if they want to find you online, check out your music, etc.?
Yeah, Instagram is a great space. That's where I'm the most active right now. TikTok is happening once in a while, but man, I'm terrible.
It's such a circus. It's all social media. I'm like,
this is I don't have time.
Yes.
Don't have time for this. But Instagram is Jimmy Pearson Official, spelled like pear, son. I also have a new project called 401k Hole, and we just dropped our first song today. It's called Fallen Idols, and it's about the celebrities I was talking about who do questionable shit and get canceled. I'm calling some people out by name in it, and I'm really, really pumped about this song. It's only on SoundCloud right now, but it is coming to Spotify and all the other streaming platforms soon as well. So Jimmy Pearson Official and 401k Hole on Instagram are good places to start.
Love it. We're going to have to collaborate. We're going to have to play some shows. We're going to have to definitely write some music. And thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, dude. You're just a slamming cat. You're just multi-talented, and we're long overdue for a music hang again.
Yes.
And in a much more positive way, because memorials are not that much fun. You know what I mean? But we made the most of it, and I'm glad that we met, because music is what brought us together, man. So
1,000, man. I'm so stoked. I'm so grateful to be here, and really appreciate you, man. You're a stand-up cat as well, bro. So let's make the music thing happen ASAP.
I love it. We will. On behalf of Jimmy, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace, love, and hair grease.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.